This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. It is upon us. It is Election Day. Feels like we've been leading up to it, well, for a very long time. And since it's Election Day, it means it's your last chance to cast your ballot. Although tens of millions of people across the country have already done so through early voting, mail-in, absentee ballots. We're going to talk about the election throughout the hour. Here with us now is Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Senator Warren, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
So let's start about voting. I saw political reporting that you cast a ballot in person in Cambridge today. Is that correct? And how was it?
Oh, listen, it was old school. You know, I've been out there encouraging people to vote early, and it's been wonderful. We've gotten so many people to the polls and absentee. But Bruce and I have always voted at the little elementary school just down the block, and we love to walk down there. So it worked out for us to be able to go. I have to say it was perfectly safe. And there was something truly wonderful about being there with the poll workers. Everybody had on a protective gear. It was all set up to handle the minimum number of things. But a reminder how hard we work to make sure that voting still works in this country, that every American citizen has a chance to vote, and then that every ballot cast gets counted. And that's the whole beating heart of our democracy.
You know, I wanted to ask you, you were a candidate in this race earlier on. Did it feel different to cast a ballot in this election in some way than in others in which you voted?
No. What it felt like was, this is our chance to make Donald Trump a one-term president. This is our chance to take away the veto from Mitch McConnell and turn our Senate from red to blue. This is a chance to elect progressives up and down the ballot. And so I just felt like, as I was, you know, filling in those little circles with my black pen, I just felt like this is truly power in America. Enough of us get together and say, this is the America we want to build, not the racist America, not the divisive America, not the America that leaves so many people behind, not the America where Mitch McConnell won't even let us get help to people who are unemployed and to our hospitals that are trying to deal with COVID and to our public schools that need to reopen. This is the America that we want to build together. I filled in those little black dots, and I felt really good about it.
You talked a minute ago about the importance of everybody getting to cast their vote and have it counted. And I know you know that we've heard a constant drumbeat, especially in the last few weeks. This could be a longer process than we're used to. The results might be unclear late into the night, tomorrow, several days. How do we make sure we maintain peace and stability throughout this entire process until we're all confident we have a result?
So I think of democracy as having multiple parts to it. Part one is what we're finishing up today, and that is the opportunity for everybody to vote. Polls are still open in Massachusetts until 8 o'clock. If you don't know where to go, go to iwillvote.com, and you can get information and vote. And then that's going to close, and then we're going to go to every ballot cast gets counted. And in a democracy, that sometimes takes a while, and especially this time because so many people voted early and there are delays in when those can be counted. And so we just have to be patient. But democracy is worth it. So we're going to be calm and we're just going to keep remembering. The key is everybody gets a chance to vote and every vote gets counted. And we're going to wait until we've heard. And I just think we have to keep repeating that because it's so important.
So let's stay with those results then for a minute. If Donald Trump is reelected as president of the United States, what is your message to American voters?
Well, that we hang in there for our values. And our first value is our democracy. Our first value is that we go with what the majority of people in this country want. Okay, I know the purists out there are going to say, no, it's actually the Electoral College and so on, but you know what I mean, that we put our faith in each other. That's what it means to be a democracy. But, you know, there's another part to that democracy, too, and that is whether Donald Trump wins or Joe Biden wins. And that is we don't all go home once the election has been called. You know, here's my plan. I'm hoping that once it's all called, that I'm out there celebrating, you know, that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris won, and, of course, that Eddie Markey won, and that we turned the Senate blue and expanded our lead in the House. Celebrate for a day, but then get right back in the fight. Because I think what we've come to understand in the past few years is that we can't just elect people in a democracy and think, okay, now the machine will run of itself. We have an obligation as citizens and a right as citizens to stay engaged, to stay involved, and to hold our elected officials accountable. So Joe and Kamala get elected, then, boy, we need to be talking about canceling student loan debt and attacking the climate crisis head on and talking about when are we going to get the universal child care and universal pre-K for every three-year-old and four-year-old and protection and expansion of health care for all of our citizens. Those are the things we have to be fighting for aggressively because that's why we voted. That's what brought us to the polls. And that's going to keep us in the fight even after this election is announced, even after the new people are sworn in, because we want our elected officials to make this country work, not just for a handful of rich people, not just for racists. We want to make it work for everyone.
Let's talk about the Democratic Party for a minute. A minute ago there, you laid out what was kind of a blue vision of how the election might turn out, with everyone from Senator Markey to Biden and Harris winning. Vice President Biden has run. Vice President Biden has run really as a moderate. And there are going to be, if he wins, Americans who feel that he has not been progressive enough and are worried that he was too much of a compromise. And there are going to be Americans who feel that he borders on what they would call socialist and is going to be too progressive. What do you expect, and how do we come together as a country across those ideological lines with a Joe Biden presidency?
You know, I'm a lot less interested in the labels than I am in what we actually get done. So think of it this way. Universal child care, universal pre-K, canceling student loan debt, expanding Social Security, reining in the influence of money in Washington, attacking climate change. Those aren't just the views of a small handful of Americans. That's things that the majority of Americans support, Democrats, Republicans, and independents. So if we focus on the things that touch people's lives, the things that the American people want to see us do, I think we can make this work because I think it's about the things that draw us together, not the things that pull us apart.
Let's talk about the Senate. You're in the U.S. Senate. We know Democrats are hoping to take back the majority in the U.S. Senate. Should that happen, what do you think should be the top priority once the new Congress is sworn in?
Well, we got to make it more functional. Partly, that means that we need to beat back the influence of money, of giant corporations. And partly, it means we can't let Mitch McConnell have veto over everything that happens in the Senate. And if he tries, then it's going to mean getting rid of the filibuster, in my view. Look at what happened to President Obama. Even when we had a majority in the Senate in his last years in office, Mitch McConnell just said no, 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 and the Senate Republicans backed him up. So even from a minority position, he kept things from happening. Things that the American people wanted to see us do, like improving health care, making investments in infrastructure, improving access to voting, making sure that we updated the Voting Rights Act, things that for decades would have been bipartisan things to do. And Mitch McConnell was straight down the line, no, no, no. So
I wonder, though, Senator, ending the filibuster, I understand that it breaks a logjam, but does it take any steps towards returning us to a bipartisan Congress? Because in the end, isn't that actually the goal? And how would ending the filibuster get us to a new era of bipartisanship?
Well, let me put it the other way around. If Mitch McConnell refuses to let us go forward on things that the American people want to see, like a COVID relief package, 5 months now, he has blocked a COVID relief package of any form. Remember, the Democrats passed it in the House, even negotiated with the White House, and Mitch McConnell just simply said, no, we're not passing anything. You think that brought us closer to bipartisanship? No, not at all. What I think will bring us closer to bipartisanship is when we pass the things that the American people want to see us do. When we pass the relief so that our public schools can open safely. When we get government functioning again, then I think we move to bipartisanship. But remember, the goal of Congress, of elected officials, is about serving the American people, not just serving one party, but serving the American people. If we get back to doing that, or let me put it this way, if we go forward to doing that, then I think that's how we start to solve the problems in this country. And this negative, I'm not going to let you do anything that Mitch McConnell has done for years now, I hope at that point begins to dissipate.
Which policy issue do you see as having the greatest opportunity for being something bipartisan that everyone can rally around? I got to tell you, I would have expected it to be another round of stimulus money. And yet you just noted that McConnell is not prepared to let that go forward until January 2021. So where is the policy issue that this body, this Congress, or some version of it that will come around in January can really, everyone can get behind it?
Okay, so I actually do think it's addressing the pandemic. And that means stimulus money, people who are unemployed, you know, the additional bump on their incomes, small businesses, restaurants. Oh, God, I'm worried about our restaurant industry. Getting our public schools open, state and local governments, so they don't have to lay off thousands and thousands of people. Remember, it's not that we couldn't get a bipartisan majority to pass that. It's that Mitch McConnell never lets us vote on it. Because if we did vote on it, I believe there are both Republicans and Democrats who would vote on it. I believe we would have a bipartisan majority, regardless of who's in the majority, whether it's Republicans or Democrats. Now, I think we get all the Democrats, and I think we wouldn't get nearly as many of the Republicans, but it would be bipartisan. And that's really my point. Mitch McConnell is not winning these fights by saying 51 Republicans don't want any help for dealing with COVID-19, don't want any money to go to increased testing and personal protective equipment. Nope. What he says is for political reasons, he's not going to permit any vote at all. And with no vote in the Senate, we can't move anything through Congress. And so that's why I talk about we may have to, if he tries that, we'll have to break the logjam.
What do you hear from constituents in Massachusetts about what they need in stimulus money? What are the priorities that you think Massachusetts voters need out of a package?
Well, I think the first one is testing. We're doing really well. We do a lot of testing here in Massachusetts, but quite frankly, not nearly enough. And I think this is part of the problem of never having had a federal plan, that we are 8 months into this pandemic, and the Trump administration and the Republicans in the Senate just have no plan at all. So we need testing, contact tracing. We need money for small businesses. We need help particularly for our restaurants, for businesses that are in arts and entertainment. Many of them have gone into what I understand they now call hibernation, but are not sure if they're going to be able to survive and come out the other side. They're going to need help to get open again. So we've got to get the pandemic under control. People are not going to sit in restaurants if the pandemic is raging. It's not a question of the government deciding to shut it down. It's the reality. But we also need to get help out to those small businesses. We need to get help to our hospitals, to our public schools, a lot of our colleges and universities. This has been a terrible budget blow for them. And for our state government, you know, we're in a big hole here in Massachusetts, and it's true in all around the country. And the last thing you want to do when you're in an economic recession is have state and local government forced to lay off teachers and firefighters and municipal clerks. That's not what we want to do. It's bad for individual families, but it's bad for the operation of government, but it's also just plain old bad for the economy. So that's how I see it right now. People want to see us spending money on things that are helpful and good and moving forward on that.
Let's talk about economic policy. It's been widely reported that you have been advising Vice President Biden on it. Politico reported last week that three Democratic officials had spoken with folks in your inner circle who said you would seek the Treasury Secretary position in a Biden administration if you were elected. Is that something you are either interested in or would accept if it were offered to you?
I have to tell you, I have put in so much energy over the past several months, like many other people, all aimed toward this day, all aimed toward getting out the vote and continuing to get it out, and now, of course, making sure that we get all those votes counted. I have stayed focused here and not on what's going to happen after this. We just have this amazing chance right now to make Donald Trump a one-term president, to put Joe Biden in the White House, to flip the Senate, and that's where my attention has stayed.
What is your message to the voters of Massachusetts right now? Not just about Election Day, but, boy, we are in a remarkable time, and it's a hard time. What do you want people to know?
That when we come together and fight for our values, that we can build a better America. We can build an America that works for people, regardless of the color of their skin, regardless of their religion, regardless of the zip code they were born in or their family's economic circumstances. That this is a moment of such opportunity that we could build an America in which every single child is loved, every single child is safe, and every single child has real opportunity to build a future. That's why I'm in this fight.
That is Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Senator Warren, really appreciate you taking the time for Radio Boston today. Thanks.
Thank you.
Let's turn to Amy Carnevale, a government affairs specialist and an elected member of the Massachusetts Republican State Committee. She serves on the state party's executive committee. She served as a leader on the Trump campaign for Massachusetts in 2016 and here in 2020. Amy, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me here today.
Amy, I understand you voted this morning. What was it like at your polling place, and how did it feel to cast that vote today?
Yes, I did vote this morning. I voted in my hometown of Marblehead in the historic Abbott Hall, which is home to the famous Spirit of 76 painting. I voted in person because I feel that it's important to take part in our democratic tradition, if possible, in person. So it felt exciting to do it. Election Day is one of my favorite days of the year when it comes along, and it was exciting to do that. I also held signs after I voted in support of our Republican candidates.
So last time in 2016, about a million voters went for President Trump here in the Commonwealth. As a member of the state party, do you have any sense of what to anticipate this time around in terms of Republican turnout and sort of number of votes cast for the president? Will it be more or less the same?
Yeah, so I think we'll see the votes cast as a whole certainly increase this time around, and we're expecting the votes cast for Donald Trump to also increase. That's what we're anticipating. And as part of the Trump leadership campaign here in Massachusetts, that has been our goal, working to increase the vote here in Massachusetts as well as support our friends north of the border in New Hampshire as well.
What do you think has people more mobilized for Donald Trump this time than last time, if we're going to see more votes?
Yeah, so I would say certainly the economy remains a paramount issue for voters supporting President Trump here in the Commonwealth. That was the driving factor. The economy was the driving factor for me in supporting the president 4 years ago, and it continues to be the driving factor in this election.
One of the things that I've been watching and sort of noting over the last year or so is a change in the Mass GOP, especially in its relationship with Governor Baker, really moving away from Charlie Baker as the standard bearer of the Mass GOP and towards President Donald Trump, who is now, for example, the picture on the homepage of the website. You are a strong local supporter of the president. Why that shift, and where does that leave the state party when the traditional standard bearer is the governor?
Well, I'll tell you, I am a Republican who thinks in Massachusetts, who thinks that, you know, we can support both, you know, President Trump at the federal level to focus on federal issues, and Governor Baker here at the state level to focus on those state issues. Certainly the Massachusetts Republican is a different breed of Republican than the Republican you see across the country nationally. And so I recognize the fact that President Trump needs to lead for states such as Montana and the Midwest and Florida, and he is serving as the leader of the entire U.S., whereas Governor Baker is leading constituents here and voters and residents in Massachusetts, and certainly that's a different populace. So I am somebody who sees that you can support different types of Republicans for different offices.
So you've said that one of the big issues for you with President Trump and the reason you support him is the economy. You know, the environment we're all living in right now is the coronavirus pandemic. How do you feel the president has done in handling it specifically as it relates to impact on the people of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts?
Well, certainly, you know, in terms of the coronavirus, the first thing he did was close the borders. He did that, you know, despite some Democrats who criticized him for doing it. And then he moved to try to get supplies to the states that needed it. He deferred to the governors to lead on the specific responses within the states. And now he is really working to bring back the economy. We just saw the release of the third quarter economic numbers, and they were really startling. Real GDP grew at 7.4%. That was above expectations. And consumer spending rose at 8.9%, which was the largest increase on record. The U.S. has actually recovered two-thirds of the economic output that we lost due to the pandemic. So that's really remarkable numbers. And I think under a Trump administration, another 4 years, we'll certainly continue to see the economy recover to pre-pandemic levels and then continue to grow.
You talked about his decentralized approach to PPE, for example. Before mm-hmm. I spoke with you, we were talking with Senator Elizabeth Warren, who lamented the lack of a centralized federal approach to testing, which arguably that is something where leaving it to every state could really be a problem versus coordinating massive testing capacity across the country. Do you believe the president in any way needs to change his approach to centralized, for example, versus decentralized management of this virus? And if he's reelected, and you do think he needs to change his approach, how do his supporters convince him to make some of those pivots?
Yeah, well, I would point out that the president has supported in another so-called CARES package. So that's additional federal funding that would include funds for increased testing as well as support for our small businesses. He's actually talked about funding in the order of like $1.7 or $1.8 trillion. That's above what Senator McConnell in the Senate has said. and close to even where Nancy Pelosi has been in the House. So the president actually has supported more funding to help our small businesses get through the pandemic. But I think it is a fundamental a difference in the approach to managing the recovery from the pandemic, where President Trump does feel that power should rest with the governors. And you see under the Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, they do believe of more of a centralized approach. So I do think that's a fundamental difference between the two parties.
I noticed that both you and Senator Warren spoke in a really personal way about what it means to you to vote in person on Election Day. We do have a huge swath of the country that has voted beforehand, and President Trump has called into question whether those votes should be counted if they can't be counted tonight. There is a long tradition of counting votes after Election Day, including for active military folks who live here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Do you support the president's pressure not to count ballots after today? And what about his statement that he might declare victory tonight, even if we're not done counting?
Yeah, so I do agree that any ballot legally cast should be counted. I think there is there may be some debate in some states or some localities about which ballots in fact are legal, and so that's certainly within the rights of the president or any campaign to question whether a ballot was legally cast. But again, if it was legally cast, 100% it should be counted, and we should wait for that. Like Senator Warren, I expect we may not know the results of the election tonight, and we may have to be patient. And I would also encourage, the American public to be patient and wait for those results. As for the president, declaring victory, I certainly I would defer to his judgment on whether he thinks that the numbers tonight give him confidence to do that. I've been in touch with some campaign staff today, and they certainly know in states like Florida and Pennsylvania, based on the number of people showing up to vote in person, how those voters trend, whether they trend Republican or Democrat. So I think they will have a good sense, even as of this afternoon, how things are looking for the campaign. I will defer to the president on whether he feels confident in declaring victory.
And that is Amy Carnevale, a government affairs specialist and an elected member of the Massachusetts Republican State Committee. Amy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, let's go to the polls, because that's where Massachusetts voters who did not vote early or by mail are today, if they're voting, potentially driving us to what Secretary of the Commonwealth Bill Galvin predicted yesterday could be record turnout in this election. And we want you to give us a call yourself. Did you vote today? Or maybe you're waiting to vote right now. What has your experience been like? Did you vote earlier by mail? Why? Maybe you're not voting today, even though you could. And you can tell us about that, too. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or tweet us at Radio Boston. Let's turn now to a couple of our WBUR reporters who are on location at polling stations. We're going to start with Deborah Becker, who's in Springfield and joins us. Deb, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So I think you've been lots of places today. Where have you been and what are you seeing?
Yeah, well, I'm in central and western Mass today. I've been to a bunch of spots. I've been to Shrewsbury and Worcester and Springfield. And I went to the two Trump strongholds of Brookfield and North Brookfield today. And I would say it's busy. It's actually busier than I expected. At one precinct in Worcester, one of the poll workers there told me that they had already surpassed the number of people who voted in the primary, and that's despite all the early voting. So it's been steady and busy, not hearing about a lot of problems, no big issues reported here. There are some minor issues about asking people for ID, or some monitors were having trouble getting into different places, a few technical issues with machines, but I'm not hearing about any big issues.
So tell us what you're hearing from voters.
Well, voters are excited, and that seems to be on both sides. They feel that they really wanted their voices heard, and I think that they're excited to feel that they're making a difference with this election, and they seem to think, though, that it's kind of up in the air, as we all do, right? It's a nail biter. So particularly in the strongholds of Brookfield and North Brookfield, there were a lot of Trump supporters that I ran into at the polls. And I spoke with Melissa Kirby. She's in Brookfield, and she talked about why she's supporting President Trump. Let's listen.
Joe Biden's been in government for 40 years and he hasn't done really that much. So why not keep somebody in there who's made changes, who hasn't been in government? So that was my choice today, was to, put my vote in for Mr. Trump and, you know, go another 4 years, make America great again.
And so that was Melissa. And I have to say, I spoke with probably 20 voters in Brookfield and North Brookfield today, and only two did not support President Trump. On the other hand, when I visited polls in Worcester and I spoke with voters there, it was overwhelmingly supportive of Biden. I talked with Johnny Henderson in Worcester, who's a veteran. This is what he said.
You know, Trump got a deferment when he was young. He didn't go to NAM. I did. You know what I'm saying? He come for money. I don't. His alternative motive is making sure that people who have money keep money. You know, that's the bottom line. He's not worried about poor people.
So that was Johnny Henderson in Worcester. So really, it's all over the map, I would say, Tiziana. But I would say that folks are eager to be casting their ballots today and taking part in the process.
Well, we will continue to watch your reporting. That's WBUR's Deborah Becker checking in from Springfield. Deb, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right, let's go to the phones, 800-423-8255, to talk about your voting experience today. We've got Melissa on the line from Maynard. Melissa, go ahead.
Hi there. I just wanted to share that I did not vote early because I've been tutoring an immigrant into America to learn English. He got his citizenship in January and has been very much looking forward to voting today for the first time. And he didn't want to vote early. He wants to go to the polls on polling day mm-hmm. to cast his vote for the first time.
So you're voting with him, Melissa?
I am.
That's great. Thanks for the call, Melissa. That's great to hear about. Let's hear from Brett, too. Brett's in Hamilton. Go ahead, Brett.
Hi, good afternoon. I just wanted to share that I decided this year to vote early in person, and it was my first time ever doing so.
Why'd you decide to do it, Brett?
Well, with the pandemic going on, I was worried if situations were to change drastically, in terms of safety. I was also a little bit worried just about the current political climate. I wanted to make sure to get it done when I could and didn't want to leave anything to chance.
Fantastic. I'm glad you got out and voted, Brett, and I appreciate you calling us, too. Thanks. I'm going to check in now with another reporter. WBUR's Miriam Wasser is in Lawrence. Miriam, thanks for checking in with us.
Hey, glad to be here.
So let's start with the edgier part of what you've been following today, because I understand you've been tracking an election issue in Lawrence today. Can you catch us up?
Yeah, sure. So I have been I've been in Lawrence for most of the day because early on we started getting word that some people who showed up to vote in person but had previously requested a mail-in ballot were told that they needed to go home and get that mail-in ballot and turn it in order to cast a vote in person here. To be clear that if you had requested a mail-in ballot and you never turned it in, you do not need to turn in your mail-in ballot at a polling place in order to get a ballot. But that seemed to be happening here, and there was a lot of confusion about that. So we've been digging into that all day. It's unclear exactly what the issue was, but the city clerk has been notified, the Secretary of State's office has been notified, and they said that they have rectified the issues and talked to all the poll workers here to make sure that people know that they can't send people away who have previously requested mail-in ballots.
Okay, and what's the mood been like there and at the other polling places you visited today?
Yeah, I think that at this polling place it's been a little there's been some confusion, right? People coming out and saying, like, I guess I have to go home and get my ballot now, but overall people seem pretty positive. It's pretty cold up here, so not a lot of people wanting to linger and chat with me after they come out of the polling place. They seem pretty anxious to get back to their cars, but I have talked to a number of people who feel like it's really important that they voted this year. I talked to one first-time voter who said she came out because the top issues for her are access to abortion and racial justice, and she voted for Biden. But one of the things that she said that was really striking to me is she said she was really nervous to come out. She thought it was a big risk to come out and vote. And, you know, I asked her a little bit more about that, and she thought that there might be a lot of protesters or that there'd be a lot of people yelling. So she, for one, was quite relieved that it was really quiet here. So that's one example.
And Miriam, just briefly, yeah. Tell us a little, I think you brought us some other voter voices. Just briefly, take us through those.
Yeah, sure. So one of the people that I spoke to also up here in Lawrence is Lee Nichols. She is voting for Biden because she thinks that Trump mishandled the coronavirus pandemic. We can play that.
What brought you out to vote today?
Because we need a better man in there. That's the truth. I don't know how Joe Biden is. I don't watch the news. I don't watch nothing. But somebody got to beat that man.
Yeah, and I also, earlier this morning, I talked to a man, Louis DiPrezio, in Chelsea. I was down there this morning, and I asked him about the coronavirus and just about what was bringing him out, and he cast a vote for the president, and here's what he told me about that.
I'll be honest, I voted for Trump. I just like him. I like what he's done. He's not a politician. As an individual, he's not the greatest person in the world, but if I have a choice between him and a lifetime politician, I'd rather go with the man that's doing things for people.
Yeah, so kind of echoing what one of the voters that Deb played us said.
So, Miriam, stand by. We've got a lot of people on the phone. I'm going to go take a couple of calls here. 800-423-8255 is the number. We've got Leslie from North Andover. Leslie, go ahead.
Hey there. So, lines were very quick. They were long, but very quick here. And there was no dissension. It was fine. It was a wonderful thing. And I'm only sorry that my youngest son can't vote.
Is he not old enough yet, Leslie?
No, he's not old enough yet. But
soon enough.
He's probably
soon
the
enough.
Most political active in the family. But it's been great, and the town has been great. And
good.
Yeah, there's no dissension.
Thanks. I'm going to let you go there, Leslie. Thanks so much for the call. I want to get Sheila in, too, from Duxbury. Sheila, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I voted 2 weeks ago, and I was thrilled to have the opportunity to vote early because of my work schedule. 4 years ago, I did not vote, even though it pained me totally, because I grew up in a very democratic, very politically active family when I was younger. So I always thought it was my duty. So this was great to be able to go in, cast my vote. I did think it was strange that I was not asked for my license or any sort of identification, even though they had my address, my precinct, but I just was ready to hand them my ID. And they said, no, we have you here. So with all the you know, talk about voting fraud, I thought that would probably be something where I would make sure that I, you know, had my ID. I understand that a lot of people, especially elderly, or don't always have access to IDs. So I get that. But for me, I that did strike me as strange.
Thanks for that, Sheila. I appreciate the call. Yeah, let me turn back to you, Miriam Wasser. Those voices, mm-hmm. You know, we know you don't need to show ID in Massachusetts, although Sheila wasn't saying she thought she had to, but that she was prepared to. Does that sound like what you've been hearing around town today?
You know, ID did come up a couple of times. There are some circumstances where you are asked as a voter to present some ID, and so there was a little bit of confusion about that from people. You know, if you're a recently registered voter and you didn't enter in, say, your license number or your full Social Security number when you registered, a poll worker might ask you to present some ID to verify your address.
Yep.
The same might happen if you're a voter who's been on the inactive rolls for a while. So there was some confusion.
Miriam,
no problem.
I'm sorry, Miriam. I got to take it back from you there. WBUR's Miriam Wasser. It is great to talk to you from the polls. Thank you.
You too. Bye.
Now, unless you have been hiding, you have probably been inundated today with messages urging you to get out and vote before the polls close. For Boston's Pine Street Inn, getting out the vote is about enfranchising one of the city's most vulnerable populations, those who are homeless. Even with fewer people and resources in the shelter due to the pandemic, Pine Street Inn was able to register around half of the guests staying in shelter this election season, and they've spent the last year helping tenants in Pine Street's permanent supportive housing to register as well. We caught up earlier today with Lyndia Downey, the president and executive director of Pine Street Inn, to learn more about why enfranchisement is so important to the Pine Street community.
We've been registering homeless people to vote for many years. We get a lot more interest, of course, around a presidential election. And really, two things are happening today at the shelter. One is we're urging people who stay at our two largest shelters in the South End to really just walk down the street. It's a block away to Cathedral High and vote if they have not voted early or voted by mail. And we now have 850 tenants living in permanent housing that have left homelessness. And we have a terrific group of ambassadors, young people, who helped us organize the voter registration this year. And one of the things they did was create a flyer for every single tenant and every single house, explaining to people where they can vote today, if they need a ride, who to get in touch with, you know, what precinct they're in. Very comprehensive. So, you know, a lot of interest, and we hope, you know, as many people as possible will get out and vote if they haven't voted already.
So, Lyndia, enfranchisement is, of course, always important. But for the homeless, it can be both extra hard and extra important. I wonder if there's a guest that comes to mind for you for whom both were true and how you helped that guest register and vote.
So, you know, when we first started this a number of years ago, we had an older gentleman in our workforce training program, and we had reached out to the program and to a number of guests in the shelter to say, we'd like to start a voter registration drive, and, you know, would you all like to help? Are you registered? Would you like to learn how to register other people? And I will tell you that he himself registered, and again, this was a few years ago, over 150 people. He was a Navy vet, you know, was very proud of his military service, and he wasn't bitter about having ended up homeless. He really blamed himself for a lot of it, but it really took off with him. He saw it as a point of civic pride, and it so empowered him to be able to talk to other guests about it and to be able to say, look, this is your civic duty, and join with me and become, you know, part of thinking about your life after homelessness. So it wasn't just about the voting. It was also about getting reengaged in the community in a way a lot of homeless people don't have the opportunity to do.
What is at stake for Pine Street's guests in this election? It's, you know, it's both a local election and a national election.
There's a lot at stake for homeless people, and you know, a number of people I've talked to, both, you know, over the years and in this recent registration, people do understand that there are policies that deliberately or not often lead to homelessness for people. Healthcare in particular, I think, is a very big issue for many of our guests. Housing policy, access to, you know, more housing and rental assistance. Those are the two obvious ones. I would say criminal justice reform comes to mind as well. You know, people sometimes are surprised when I tell them how engaged people are on this. You know, we do hear the occasional, my vote doesn't matter, you know, I can't be bothered. But that's the exception, I would say. What we hear much more of is, how do I do this? Tell me about it.
So the second wave of the coronavirus is here, it seems. Winter's on the way. We definitely want to have you back to talk more in depth about that in the next few weeks. But just briefly for now, how are you feeling about the road ahead for your guests?
It's going to be a very, very tough winter. It's already getting cold. We know the street numbers are up, which is the biggest worry going into the winter. We are talking to the state in particular about bringing more capacity online. We need more beds for the winter. We've lost some capacity through COVID and through social distancing. And we've been faced with, I think, these really stark and horrible choices, which is, do we let people in and run the risk that, especially for people who are vulnerable, that they could pick up the virus? Or do we say to folks, you know, we think this is too high risk. We can't accommodate you right now.
That is Lyndia Downey, president and executive director of the Pine Street Inn. Again, we'll look forward to talking to you more about this over these coming weeks. Lyndia, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Block is the founder and director of the nonpartisan group Play for the Vote, which says it'll have some 600 performers offering live music to voters in 48 states today. Mike Block is also a member of Yo-Yo Ma's Silk Road Ensemble. And Radio Boston's Jamie Bologna met up with him this morning as he played for voters in Somerville.
We're at the Central Library here in Somerville, near where I live, and I'm going to be performing here at various peak voting times throughout the day.
You know, we might not see it here in Somerville, but of course folks are going to be out with signs and protesting around the country. I'm just wondering, from your perspective as a musician, as someone who wants to bring this beautiful music to folks, how we as a country can bridge that divide.
An election is often a moment where we're focusing on the differences between candidates and the difference between our goals. And music really does have a unique power to bring people together through shared experiences, not just a shared experience of a concert, but shared emotional experiences. It can help us feel that connection to the people around us.
And Mike, you know, as voters line up here in Somerville, what do you hope that they take away from hearing your music today?
Life can be full of magical moments where we feel connected to the world around us and to the people around us. And I feel surprising moments of connection and music can really change somebody's perspective as to what's possible or what can be expected out of even an important day like today.
You're here playing against the hustle and bustle of Somerville. There's buses going by, construction vehicles, they're building a new high school nearby. It's less than 40 degrees out. Are these the circumstances under which you normally play your music?
Well, this isn't exactly where I envisioned my career would end up. But, you know, during this pandemic, musicians across the country were unable to play normal concerts. And so this day felt like a day where we could make the effort to go to where the people are going to be. This is not Symphony Hall, but it does feel great to be connected. You know, at some point, my daughter's going to be going to this high school that's under construction now, and I walk by this library often, and it's great to just feel connected to the community.
Saw a couple folks coming in here to vote, and they gave you the thumbs up. How does that feel?
Well, that's about as good as I could hope for today, yeah.
That's cellist Mike Block, speaking with Radio Boston's Jamie Bologna. And that's our show for today. Happy Election Day, everyone.